Welcome back, everybody, and welcome to part two of our sit down with my friend Tony Schiller. Hopefully, you got a chance to listen to part one. We're not going to do any spoilers on that one, Tony, but we do encourage people to go back and listen to part one to give probably some relevance to maybe some of the conversation that we have here today, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
All right. So, Tony, thanks for coming back for part two. I just felt like we didn't get enough time to dive into. I would say. Maybe it's not Tony part 2.0, but it is kind of where I think it's where you have evolved into, which was not maybe the normal path of most, you know, aging age group adults or age group triathletes. But you ended up kind of taking, it's not a left turn because it's really not that dynamic, but it was a big change. Yep. And so, and that change is how you went from just essentially, and not saying that you don't still race at a high level, because you do. I've watched you race at nationals last year, and you know, you got your national champion jerseys all around you, which I don't have, which by the way, congratulations, and world championship stuff too. But you went on to find a philanthropy aspect to your passion, and you have really run with that. Kind of tell us, first of all, like maybe where the genesis of that came from, because I know a little bit of the backstory, but I'm interested to hear it from your perspective.
Fabulous. Well, that's good. It's good to be back with you, Chris. So let's go back. Maybe we'll do two quick parts here. First part is back to that period of time when I was a kid, and where I think I started running. Actually, my first race of my life, I think I was 5 years old, and my dad sent me to a store about four blocks away to buy a pack of cigarettes for him. So I raced, and the goal was for me to get to the store and back and give my dad his pack of cigarettes so he could light his next cigarette with the last one from the last pack. And so he burned it really slowly while I'm running. I get all back and I'm huffing and puffing, then I give him a cigarette to kill himself. So, and he nearly did die from cigarettes. Well, he actually did. He had pulmonary disease when he died. That's how it went. And that formed the idea for me that, number one, I would never smoke, never have had a puff in my life, but I wanted to be an athlete, and I ran everywhere. I loved running, but there was no running programs. There wasn't anything. So when I was getting cut from teams, which we talked about, mm-hmm. and really falling short athletically, there wasn't the option of turning to racing, at least for me. And I was on the sidelines in life, if you will. And when I was 15, a neighbor man by the name of Frank, he was getting into jogging. You know, you'd see Frank go by the house every now and then on a run. And one day he knocks at the door, and he's come for me, which is weird. And he says, I remember when Tony used to run all the time. Is it okay if he goes running with me? My mom goes, well, if you will. So she's, you want to run with Frank? And I go, why? And so we went to the St. Paul Central High School track, and we raced a mile. And I think we did like 8:05.
Wow.
And Frank and I had a little sprint down the finish line. And I walked home with my calves cramped up, right? and he says, I think you could be a runner. Maybe you could be a miler. And so that was the beginning. And I've thought back, especially.
And you're 15 at the time, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes you like a sophomore, freshman in high school?
I was going into my sophomore year of high school.
Okay.
And I'm not doing anything. So, and I've already, that season was the basketball manager. So, you know, I'm watching the games, rebounding for others. So I ended up getting my career started. And it was a slow takeoff. But let's fast forward into my 40s. And I looked at, I always had this idea of, as I started looking back and reflecting on my life, like, what were the turning points? And I think a big turning point was Frank, because the kids I was hanging out with at 15 were really troubled boys. A lot of shoplifting, a lot of drugs, a lot of alcoholism, and in one case, jail time. Ooh. And that was the boys I was hanging out with because my friends were doing sports and I wasn't in sports.
Ooh, okay.
So I think back to, what was the gesture? And it was the simple, loving act of an invite. Mm-hmm. So think about how nervous, you're 40-some years old, you're a neighbor guy, and you knock on the door and you go, hey, kid, you want to go for a run?
Yeah.
And you're certain to get rejected, right?
Well, yeah. Well, and now everybody looks at you like you're a predator.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of wondered, what does he want? But he just wanted to care for me. And so we go out and we do that run, and we never did it again. But that set me on, and that week I was on the track team. Because it lit something in me. And right away, I went from being a kid who was struggling in school, had terrible attention deficit, and of course it was never diagnosed, mm-hmm. never drugged.
Thank goodness.
I couldn't control my thoughts. They were just always racing, audible sounds distracting me, and it was very difficult to concentrate for an hour, let alone a day in school. So running, all of a sudden, it started clicking. Within a couple weeks of starting running, I could sit nice and still in the classroom, and I could sleep at night, and I could understand what the teacher was instructing.
Yeah.
So running had this elixir quality to it right away, and I was hooked.
Okay.
So now fast forward, thinking back on this man who invited, and I just thought, someday I'm going to create a kids event, and it's going to be a one of a kind for all those kids that are on the sidelines in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do something that would really make them feel great. And I remember back in my pro days where I was racing triathlon, and I was at an event in Bakersfield. They brought me in. They flew me in for the race, and they said, we'll pay for your airfare and your hotel and your entry, but you have to stick around and volunteer for our kids' race. I went, okay, I'll do that. Well, it turns out that's what they told all the pros, and myself and one other pro showed up, and no one else did.
What?
Which I thought was really lame, right?
Yeah.
All these guys, and the race director said, yeah, I'm not going to do that next year. Like, there's 12 of you who promised to come, and you two are the only two that showed up.
Wow.
So kind of bad.
Jerk store.
Yeah, exactly. You got to give back, you know, if you're going to be receiving like that. So, but I watched the kids race, and there's maybe 100 kids racing. And it kind of bugged me because the moms and dads were all screaming about what place the kids were in. And beat her or pass him. Come on, you can get top five. Come on, you got to earn a medal. And I got sort of ticked off because I said, that's not what would have made me love the sport.
Mm-hmm.
What made me love the sport was my dad saying, come on, let's see how fast you can run home with the cigarettes.
Yeah.
It was a personal challenge. Or Frank saying, see if you can beat me down the home stretch, and we're running. That made me love the sport. And it made me love the sport that my mind got quiet and I could do classwork. And I burned off sweat and energy and anxiety. And that made me love the sport, but not beating someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why are we taking this brand new sport, the triathlon, that is just kind of burgeoning in the United States and we're leading the world? Why are we modeling all the other sports by focusing in on the 7-year-old prodigies?
Yeah.
Why are we doing that? And so we can get a little sideways here, Chris, and talk about USAT. But, you know, that's kind of what they want to do with the kid program, which I've been a proponent against. I've said, let's not make it about competition. I don't think the fastest triathletes of the future will have been introduced to elite racing at 7 years old in triathlon.
Well, and there's not many sports, I think not hardly any sports, where you can look at, and even if you look at traditional stick and ball sports, where people who are gifted and good at a young age end up being successful as adults.
Almost never.
I mean, you can look, you can say, okay, well, Tiger Woods was, you know, he did, but then he ended up having his own problems and troubles, which he could have found out at some point in time anyways.
Right.
But, you know, look at the Michael Jordans. Michael Jordan rode the bench in high school basketball,
right. You
know, then was just in college where he blossomed, and then, you know, he became the best basketball player ever to play the game. Wayne Gretzky was the same. You know, they were not gifted young adults. And, you know, and I've seen young kids with our youth program with the MJets. I watched kids who were very gifted not blossom into being, you know, the best as adults. And I think, you know, I looked at the kids themselves and saw how it was hard for them because they become successful and now that there's just a ton of pressure on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they don't have that same success, they kind of walk away from it.
Well, absolutely. I know you have a very good hand on this because I think your program that you did with MJETS was a really awesome one and had, I think, the right mix of, okay, so you have this interest and you have this goal-setting mindset and you want to do well, so let's have fun with that and let's structure it. Let's make it solid, but you didn't make it do or die.
No,
and
it was a team building aspect to that too. You know, It was balanced. Everyone has supported each other. There was aspects of, you know, of other personal growth that came through those pieces, and that was and it is much bigger. And USA Triathlon, I think, you know, Bridget has started out that way. Now they've made a systemic change with their new CEO, with Rocky. And if you looked at like what the Splash and Dash series that they're rolling out this year, that's actually, in order to be a part of that, they're mandating that it's non-competitive. You can't time it. And for the exact reasons what you're saying. And I'm always, I don't want to say astounded, because I kind of knew that you had this vision, but this was your viewpoint from the start.
Right. So when we started, so I knew that coming home from that race in Bakersfield that I was going to put on a kids race sometime, and I just needed the right place. And I lived near the Lake Ann site in Chanhassen, and I always thought this would be a perfect site because it had a long, flat beach without drop-offs for kids. And so we could have a race where they were running in water neck deep or less, and they could put their feet down, which means they didn't have to be great swimmers, which means we could open the race up to everybody.
Yes.
So because, lo and behold, when I would go to Iron Kids races and they would do them in a pool, the kids who would win the race would be elite swimmers.
Yep. Shocker.
So you could be a really fast runner, or you could be a kid that's already raced bikes, but if you couldn't swim, you were done. Mm-hmm. So, but in my races that we were going to establish, you know, it's like you could actually do pretty well in the water, even if you weren't a swimmer. But so I went to John Foss and I said, I've got this idea for this race, and it's going to be a non-timed race, and we're going to have it in shallow water. And John said, it'll never go. But I had the vision for it for a long time. And then, of course, the foundation, the Miracles of Mitch, launched at that time, and it was a cancer charity. They wanted to raise money. They did not have any fundraising apparatus. So I said, well, I've been looking at putting on a kids' triathlon for a long time. We could do it, eventually turn it into a fundraiser. And so I volunteered in 2004, and we put on the race, and we had 300 kids. And we raised about, $13,000.
Nice.
So it was a nice, humble start. But the next year we landed Cargill as a sponsor. Mm-hmm. And we had 600 kids, and we raised about $60,000. And so we were on to something. So we developed this really cool platform where we were attracting kids not to finish or win or beat others in a triathlon, but to do a triathlon and to train for it, but while fundraising. And over the course of 10 years, we ended up having a total of 12,500 kids race.
Wow.
And we saw fundraising of $4.5 million.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
It was unheard of, and probably still is. And what was really cool about that, Chris, is that we had a sacred oath with the kids, a trust that every dollar raised because of Cargill funding and funding from Foss Swim School and from General Mills and from other companies, that every dollar raised that would go to the charity and end up giving grants for families that had a kid with cancer. So it was going to be house payments and car payments and things of that nature. And the money would go right into a bucket. All the expenses of the race were covered. My costs were covered, right?
This paid for your jet, too?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? And those were Lambo years for you, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. No, I actually took a pay cut probably to get into this kind of work. I did take a pay cut to get into this kind of work. But it felt like a new beginning where the other years were so focused on getting ahead. And then starting this with the Miracle Kids and coming up with the vision for it and building it, it was like, it just felt right. It felt sort of like a spiritual journey for me going that way. But what I loved about it is all these kids were discovering the sport, and we had so many that said, I want to be a triathlete, because they didn't feel the pressure that they felt in other sports.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't feel like anything was at stake. But over the years, we've had a number of kids that have left that little kids triathlon and gone on to actually race pretty seriously. And I suppose it's early in the history, but at the end of 10 years, the foundation saw a big change. We'll talk about it briefly, but a big change where some new leaders came in, and their goals were very different than what we had lined up. And they wanted different plans for how they wanted the triathlon to be, how they wanted kids to come to it, and how they wanted to use the funds and whatnot. And out of that, it just was kind of a it was an end of the road for me. I no longer could continue to ask kids to fundraise in that way. So it was, they had a different plan for it than I thought was the right plan. So it was kind of insurmountable, and I decided it was time to go a different direction. So gave me a new opportunity, and at first it was tough, but we landed on Cycle Health, which is now, we're in our fifth year, and we're now part of the YMCA, and we're over 5,000 kids that have done our events now.
And you've branched out from just doing triathlons. You got was it the Iditarod?
Kid Ride.
Iditarod. That's not what we're supposed to call it, right?
No, that's close.
That's the wrong one.
It's the Kid-a-Ride. Then we have the Resilinator, which is a buddy race where the kids are tethered together. We have a lot of obstacles. There are large scale events. The triathlon that we do, the Breakaway Kids Try, is kind of breaking away from the belief that you can't do it and breaking away to confidence and a life and a love of fitness. We love reaching kids that perhaps have ADHD. Mm-hmm. We love reaching kids that are dealing with things like anxiety. We love reaching kids that have low confidence, kids who maybe are involved in other sports and doing really well but want to have a change. So
they're fun. I mean, my kids did it last year, and we went out there, and first of all, it's a beautiful day, and out there in Elm Creek Park, it's just like, that's where I grew up. I grew up in like swimming in that little man-made pond there. It was a lot dirtier when I was growing up than it is now. They didn't have the little bubblers and filters and everything. It's like, it's super clean. But the thing that gets me when we go there is that it is just every kid is super jazzed, and it's not just from the fact that it's a triathlon, but there's so much going on because they do swim, bike, run. Mm-hmm. But when you added the obstacle course, and there's like huge bubble makers, and they got that slip and slide piece, and there's so many things that like the kids just, it's like it really challenges them, so it becomes almost like it's this perfect marriage of I would say the introduction to multi-sport or non-traditional stick and ball sports, and then like monkey bars and jungle gym stuff.
Right.
And it's not like, and you're not placating to people by just putting up a bounce house or something, but it's actual things where they need to have some coordination, like those nets that they have to walk over. And it is that like kind of that perfect combination it takes it from just being a regular sport to like a real, not an activity, but a real event.
Yeah. The obstacles are something that I'd like to see added to triathlon one way or another. I think triathlon has gotten into these rules where you're a sprint, you're an Olympic, you're a half or 70.3, a 140.6. And then that's sort of what it is. And it's swim, bike, run, and all of this. And we just are sort of looking at it and knowing that what happens in running for kids is that you have kids who are really good runners, and maybe you can relate to this a little bit. And if you're a really good runner and you're tired and you get to the last stage, you want to just blow by people, and that's fun. And then kids who struggle with running. And so there you get to the end of the race and you're saying, this is that part I don't like. And races oftentimes reinforce in a kid, you don't want to be a runner.
Yeah.
Right. And especially if you're being passed. But if we can create an obstacle course, instead of noticing all the other kids around you who are flying past you, you're thinking about, I have to balance on this section here. I don't want to lose my balance, or I have to use some agility to crawl through this tunnel. And or like you said, the bubbles or the slip and slide, and you're picking your line to go through the bubble machine. And along the way, you're not thinking about how much running hurts, but you're thinking about how much fun you're having.
They're running from thing to thing to thing, kind of like, and it does, it creates more of a game out of it.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely.
And it takes it from just being like a monotonous, singular distance to all the different aspects of it that make it like it distracts you. It's like it almost tricks you into like enjoying it.
Right.
But you're doing the same thing.
We work really hard to set up a fun, structured event like that and to get creative with it. Tons of times, a lot of costs that go into it.
Yep.
And we have a phenomenal team of volunteers that always attend. And by the way, we're doing something that's unheard of in the United States. We have SweatRx. So
tell me about that.
SweatRx is one of our favorite things. I can show you the SweatRx form here. But this one is YZ Children's Clinic. And they their doctors or pediatricians actually write a SweatRx prescription. So they become the pediatricians become the Frank in our story. So they see that kid who maybe is on the sidelines in life, or maybe the kid that is oversported and kind of on a burnout track already, and they say, hey, here's a summer adventure that you might want to try. And they put their name on it and say, I am writing this prescription for you to enter a summer triathlon.
So what I'm looking at here, what Tony handed me, is it's like a prescription pad like a doctor would have. It's colored. It has four great action shots of kids that are participating in the Breakaway Kids Try from last year. I see one on the swim pad there, and yep, going down the slip and slide and the finish and wearing the medal. Triathlon for kids 7 to 17, swim, bike, run, obstacles. And the date of it is Saturday, August 18th, 9 a.m. start at Elm Creek Park Reserve. And then it has on the bottom, YZ Children's Clinic, and it says SweatRx, a prescription for adventure. And it has a place for the doctor to put the kid's name and with the host partner of Three Rivers Park District. And it looks like you just rip this off and they give it to the kid and they can go, which, yep, is a great promotional piece, but it also feels like this is your this is your prescription for,
absolutely,
adventure.
And so we have health partners, we have Children's Hospital, we have South Lake Pediatrics, we have Central Pediatrics in the St. Paul area, all these clinics across the metro writing prescriptions, and we have the YMCA acting as an inviter. We have Foss Swim School acting as an inviter. So we've taken all these entities who their mission is to see kids healthier,
yep,
more active, more energized in a world that actually de-emphasizes being active. It says we'll drive you everywhere you need to go. When you are bored, grab a digital device and lose yourself in,
mm-hmm,
it, right? If you want to have a play date, we'll get you there.
Yep.
If you want to exercise, we'll sign you up for an organized sport, and the coach will blow the whistle and tell you when to move.
Yep.
That's the world kids are living in, and where we grew up in a world where we got on our bikes and took off, and we were gone for the day.
It's interesting you bring that up. I read in the news recently where I think I want to say it was in Vermont, where some parents were actually cited by the local police for, mm-hmm, allowing their kid, for not like supervising their,
right,
kids.
Right.
And it was a story, I think it was called Free Range Parenting is what they're calling it.
Right.
Which is, I mean, we were both free range parents.
We were free range kids.
Yeah, yeah. Like I walked to school through a soybean field, you know, like we found our way everywhere we went.
We crossed railroad tracks with trains coming.
Oh,
we'd,
yeah,
wait to see how close we could get to the train. You know?
I would swim in the river. We put pennies in the tracks when the train would come, you know, so you could have those. But it's interesting how that has changed, you know, mm-hmm, like, well, how you and I grew up and how that was part of it. That was, you know, I did play organized sports, but it was like was it the park?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, and you know, like it was different from how it is now. And
absolutely,
except for hockey. Hockey became more and more programmed and organized,
right,
but still not as, you
not
know,
like
institutionalized
today,
as it is today.
When you hung up the skates in March.
Yeah.
And you didn't put them back on until October.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas
today, now you go to camp.
Now they go to camp. I mean, my kids don't. And
yeah,
trust me, even as a parent who has two boys and two young boys in hockey that,
yeah,
that I think could they be better if they played, you know, additionally during the off season? They probably could at some point be better when it came to tryouts.
Right.
But there's everything I know, every bit of information I know tells me that is not good for the kids. I mean, to the point where I know that I've actually watched Neil Broughton, who is, you know, he's an Olympian, played, yeah, in the 80 Olympic team, played for the North Stars, Stanley Cup, and everything. Like, he is Mr. Minnesota Hockey, has come out and said that the worst thing you can do is have your kid play hockey all year round.
Right.
Because early specialization into sports, which is what which is what most kids are doing nowadays, ends up ruining them.
Well, yeah, you probably know Dr. Paul Langer,
mm-hmm,
one of our big supporters,
yep,
is TC Orthopedics. He's done a lot of research on, it's fascinating stuff. Maybe he's pulled it all together, but the research indicates that I'm going to mash it up, so I'll just use some rough numbers as I recall them. But essentially, if you think about this, Chris, if you specialize before the age of 16, so basically before you're old enough to have a license, that you're twice as likely to never play college sports for 4 years.
I've read the same, yeah, some very similar
whereas
things.
If you wait and don't specialize until 16, but then start specializing in your sport. And think about this for swimming. Mm-hmm. So if a kid swims but also plays soccer, or if a kid swims but also runs track, twice as likely to finish all 4 years of college in your sport yep. as if you started specializing in only doing swimming, say, before 16.
Yes.
And almost all swimmers are specialized by 7 or 8.
Oh.
Almost all, you know, runners.
Gymnastics.
Yeah, gymnastics. You're specialized really early. So so you look at that and you say twice as likely. Another way of looking at it is if you have your kid specializing at 12, 13, 14, they're half as likely to actually have a collegiate career. And that's what everyone wants, scholarship mm-hmm. or otherwise. So less so to say that's a wrong approach, more so to say consider always giving your kids chances for multi-sport. Let them dabble in other things. Even if you are a hockey player, let them have some fun with lacrosse. Wayne Gretzky played lacrosse all through the summer.
Yep.
And never touched the skates. And then by October, he's leading the NHL in scoring, right? So as a 19-year-old or whatever. So consider having your kids. Maybe you have a kid who's is involved in, let's say, in hockey. Well, do a triathlon in the summer and spend half of the summer getting really fit by bicycling.
Yeah.
You know, use a little cross training to keep them from being fully specialized.
But don't you know, I think with the kids, this is what always has maybe tainted me in the kids training arena mm-hmm. is parents that want to train their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and this is kind of a little bit why I've backed away from you know, coaching right. as actively in youth sports is, you know, I think.
Yeah, you were filling a niche that was being asked for, but yeah, might not have been the best one, right?
But and essentially, like, let your kids just ride to the beach.
Right.
Or ride to the park. Like, don't prescribe a training ride, because I think all too often kids are treated as little adults,
right.
which is the exact opposite of what they need. You know, if you make it fun, like how instead of just making a run course, you have a run and obstacle course, right?
Yeah.
You make you distract the kid they're still doing the thing that's active,
mm-hmm.
but you're changing it.
Right.
You're changing it enough so that it becomes a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so instead of saying let's go for a run, let's go running. How about we go play tag for an hour?
You know what it is though. I call it the our gang influence, or the comedies from way back. Most of the audience probably doesn't remember our gang comedies, but the thing that you saw in them, and same with Charlie Brown, you never saw an adult. So when you didn't see an adult, what you had is a fundamentally different experience when the kids were together without the adult.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens in youth sports when you add the adult to the mix is you wipe out the nature of being a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So if you spend time with the Wayzata cross country team, and I've spent a little time, just a little bit, with those guys, just from time to time to know a little bit about it. And they're the best cross country program in the Midwest and one of the best in the nation, right? One state the last how many years. But if you run with these kids during June or July, they're not having a normal workout. They're turning every workout, the captain's practices and stuff, into a game. Now, once they get to the season, Coach Pop changes it all up. And
yep.
before that, Coach Bill. And it's organized and it's fundamental. But it's only a 10, 12-week crash season.
Yeah.
Right? But while those kids are training together, it's amazing. It's like they turn on like our gang influence and they go, let's go do 10 miles, but let's turn into a game of tag and let's include a frisbee and let's include log jumping and let's include tree climbing.
It's
creative. It does. And it's so fun. And they get done and they've done 10 miles and they're building up this base, but they're not playing by a rule that an adult brought in.
Yeah. They're not checking it on their Garmin. They're mm-hmm. not checking it off on a training log. It's not in a prescription. This is like kids going to the park and playing pickup ball.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if my kids wanted to play street hockey in the summertime, I'm totally cool with that, but I'm not going to tell you to do it. I'm not going to, like, I'll tie your rollerblades for you,
yeah.
but you're going to decide with your friends that you're going to do this for how long, and you're going to probably come up with some weird, goofy, goofball rules.
Right.
But that's where I think those things, as far as, like, kids' sports come from, have become a little bit lost because mm-hmm. the parents are now trying to formulate it, maybe capsulate it with in monetize it, you know, with whether they're trying to get into like a city sport or a professional sport or organized sport, having the kids go out and just do things on their own and be creative on their own. There's only one sport I can truly think that has mm-hmm. has evolved, and I think you and I have talked about this, has evolved without any real structure from grown-ups skateboarding.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you think about all those tricks, all the moves, all the practices. There's no parents out there. There's no, like, there's no, you know, skateboarding. There might be, like, a skateboarding camp here and there. I know my neighbor is a professional skateboarder.
Yeah.
And he has, they do, like, you know, intro camps and stuff. But they don't, but all that stuff is all driven by the kid's creativity. And that's why they love it and that's why they stick with it.
Well, and if you took a kid that was in the Minnesota State High School Ski League for downhill and took a kid who just played in the half pipe and then said, which one of the two is most likely to make the Olympics? It's going to be the kid that plays in the half pipe, just doing tricks. And the one that's in the state high school league, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, they're going to be really structurally sound.
Yep.
And then let's be clear. I don't want to be bashing sports. That's not what this is about.
Oh, I thought this was a bashing sports
episode. No. But I think what's happened, and I've watched a lot of kids and I've paid a lot of attention. I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of schools and programs in my speaking days and the sports stuff. I think there's a disconnect between the ultimate goal that a lot of adults have and what really drives kids. So if you take kids that are, and there's a magic at pre-10. At pre-10, kids want to please the adults around them. So if they go fast, they'll please them. Oh, wow, was I fast? Yeah, you were so fast. Can we go fast again? That's a pre-10, right?
Yep.
Right around 10, 11, you start going, well, I'll go fast on my own terms, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't do that pre-10. So around that age, a kid needs autonomy, needs to be able to break out. And at that point, they need peers, and they need camaraderie, and they need adventure, and they need creativity, and they need unstructured play as well. And it's right about that time that our pyramid structure in sports says, okay, here's how you do it with adult-oriented thinking. Right when that kid is naturally inclined, kind of created by the divine, I think, to actually need to have his, her own space a little bit. So we have the right things in mind, but I would say rather than bashing sports, I would say we need to make sure we're getting out of the way more. Yeah. We need to be able to back off more. And, you know, so if a school, if a swim club, a basketball team, you know, a hockey program, if they have those kids for 10 hours a week, they got to figure out a way to give them 3 or 4 hours of free play. Maybe they take the skates off and they go outside and do dry land. And maybe they get out of the pool and they go for a run or go for a bike ride. Mm-hmm. But the tendency for the adults is what we'd be losing all those hours of lap time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would. But the kids, when they can say, you know what, last week we were doing dry land and we went for a bike ride. This week we want to spend more time in the pool. And adults don't realize how powerful that is when the kids say, we're choosing pool.
Oh, yeah.
Then now you've got something, right? But if they're coming to the pool and they're going, what are we going to do today? We're going to be in the pool. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's not the same as the kid choosing pool, right?
Yep.
And the kid saying, well, what do we want to do today? We want more ice time. We want more drills. We want to do the jackets going sprints back and forth on the ice.
Yep.
Really? You want to do that? Yeah, because I think we have to work on our speed. And all of a sudden the kids will get oriented to what they need for success. But not if it's drilled at them all the time. So
your insight to all this, Tony, just it amazes me because, you know, you coming from you're not a father,
no,
you know, but you have some of the most fatherly instincts and insights that I've ever seen from people, and the way that you interact and have a vision for kids is uncanny. And the things that you have been able to take from your own life and your own experience dating back to like Frank or pre-Frank is amazing. And it really is that I think is, you know, I'm amazed number one by, you know, by the accomplishments you had as an athlete. But when people ask me about, or when I talk to you about you behind your back to other people,
besides the good stuff,
you know, I can honestly say that 95% of the things I talk about are the things that you do now. Hmm. And I know that when people in the future look back on you, on what you've done, on the influences and impacts that you've had, not only on the sport, but on society, that that the legacy that you are creating now and the things that you have in the works, whether it's, you know, I'm seeing on the wall, the biking challenge, mm-hmm. and the prescription, the Sweat RX, these things are things that nobody else sees. Nobody else has conceptualized, and you are bringing them to life, mm-hmm. and you're impacting so many kids, and you have been for so long, and you're still a young man that, you know, that, and I think about how happy I am to know that there are people like you out there that are doing things in the sport that I love for the people in my life that I love, my children, and knowing that it's not just me pushing that football down the field, that you are taking it and you are running with it. And well, you are doing things, Tony, that aren't being done. And people that you have the charisma and the wisdom and the foresight to be able to allow other people to see it through your eyes, and they help you, and it makes it even bigger. And that is something that I can't tell you how much it makes me proud.
Well, I'm really flattered to hear it. When I get a lot of compliments, I like them, but I'm also a little okay. But at the same time, I think I have a keen memory of different things in how it felt to be a kid and how to be afraid of your shadow, and what it felt like to get patted on the back. And I got to tell you a couple things. You know, I think back to the start of running, and it wasn't a fast rise as a runner, but I remember becoming junior in college and being ready to break through. And a guy that became my coach, Bob Keister, looked at me and he said, you know, Tony, you can do amazing things in the sport of running. You can accomplish things beyond your belief. And I wanted to believe him. And he said, but you don't believe in yourself. And you don't have the belief I have in what you can do. And he said, would you consider suspending your doubt in yourself and just letting me be the confidence for you? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what you're capable of in every race. I'll tell you what you're capable of in the next interval. And I'll ask you to lay it on the line for me. And you just run as if I'm believing in it for you. And we'll just do this together. And over those next 2 years, I dropped my times crazy levels, right? Just from way into the ordinary hemisphere down to All-American status. And I think about the kids space, and I just want to scream out to parents. That was when I was 20 and 21, 22. And I was just learning. I was just cutting my teeth. Kids can do this then. Mm-hmm. Kids can find their time. And as they say, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. I was doing the miles for 7 years, but it was unstructured and it wasn't scientific and it wasn't with the same level of passion as needed. But then all of a sudden the light went on. Like, wow, what if I upped my game? What if I upped the ante? What if I really learned how to believe in myself? And I still have those same doubts, but those voices come back of Bob Keister and other people. It's so obvious to me that that kids want to be acknowledged. It's so obvious to me that they want to be told they just did great in a race or in a sport. And they're so fearful of letting someone down, of not proving themselves. And so what happens is so many kids are playing a sport with this big end game in mind. It's years down the road. And instead of just getting out and doing the workout like those Wayzata cross-country runners do. Yep. And that's what I want people to see, is let the kids play.
Yep.
If you're a parent of a kid on a sports team and that team has an incredible intensity and you watch super highs and lows and if-then confidence, meaning if we win, then I'm confident, and if we lose, then I'm not. And if you see those big swings and emotions out of kids, it's time to back it off. And I love when parents say, where was your event when I was a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Because and why haven't there been more events like yours out there for our kids? Because everything they're doing is so intense. And I just think there's a time for that intensity. Your Bob Keister will show up when you're ready to really go for it. And he doesn't have to be there when you're 12.
Nope.
You know, and
that's what we have Tony Schiller for.
I hope. So that's my little part in life.
Well, Tony, it's like, you know, I I can't say enough. I can't say enough about you and what you've done. I think thanks is doesn't even come close to it. But what I would like to do is say thank you to you for spending another time with me.
Absolutely.
The Breakaway Kids Try, how do we find that on the web? What's the...
Yeah, it's cyclehealth.org.
Cyclehealth.
Cycle like bicycle health, or creating a new cycle of health in kids. Cyclehealth.org.
Cyclehealth.org. Find out all the programs, all the things that you have going on.
Yeah.
And if you are interested in supporting Tony's cause, you can contact Tony through that as well. And because these things aren't done on their own. They're done by everybody pitching in. Folks like Cargill, why is that a children's clinic, Three Rivers Park District? All those things, we thank those people for being a big part of it.
Yeah, we are in the nonprofit category.
There you go.
We
501c.
We've never made money.
Except on a Lamborghini.
Yeah, exactly. we've always scratched to get by at the end of the year, but you know, we're still hanging in there.
Well, you're doing a great job, and obviously you're doing the right thing for the right people and for the right reasons, and so for that we say thanks.
Hey, Chris, thanks for being a great champion. I love it when you're out there. You usually pick up a hand and volunteer for us.
I try.
And while your kids are racing, and you got a bunch of them, and I think one by one they've all come out or will come out, and it always means a lot to see you out there too. And I know you've shared with a lot of people, hey, get your kid in this, and that's really, we've done it word of mouth, and thousands and thousands of kids. I think at the end of the year, we'll go over 20,000 kids have done one of the races that I've put on. So
yes, that's great.
So we do that by word of mouth. So this is great to be able to be on your program.
Well, happy to have it out here. So thank you again, Tony, for coming back. Everybody, thanks for listening again today. We ask you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you like what you're hearing, give us a little feedback on the bottom there. And let us know what you think, what you like, what you don't. And we look forward to talking to you next time. Start again.